Ing. This continuation of his seed is a clear demonstration of divine support for him and the Bourbon line. With confidence, Louis writes that this latest royal birth is one of the most visible signs that I have yet received of God's protection. I am aware that such is without example in any of my regal predecessors' reigns, and that this long succession of kings assures the perpetuation of the good fortune of my lands. He asks for the Te Deum to be sung across France in acknowledgement of the divine blessing afforded his family and nation. With the boy's June birth, Louis has declared the summer of 1704 a season of general celebration. The Duke of Saint-Simon, courtier and diarist, records disapprovingly in his secret journal, "This event caused great joy to the king and the court. The town of Paris shared their delight and carried their enthusiasm almost to madness by the excess of their demonstration and their festivities." It is at Versailles, where Saint-Simon is one of the myriad drones in attendance on the Sun King, that the festivities reach their zenith. The day there habitually culminates in colourful evening amusements, balls, concerts, operas. But this being summer, it is the season for Louis' beloved outdoor fêtes. A keen and accomplished actor in his youth, when an addiction to amateur theatricals was formed, Louis still basks in the opulence of such displays. They allow him to reclaim the thespian limelight without demeaning his regal status. The fête, like so much at Versailles, is part play-acting, part propaganda, and wholly for Louis' pleasure. Most of the fêtes take place outdoors in the regimented grounds. The water bobs with tributes from across Europe, some from countries that are now France's bitterest enemies. On the mile-long, cross-shaped Grand Canal glided 100 swans from Denmark, 2 little yachts from England, carved and gilded galleys decked with red and white streamers and hangings fringed with gold, a small warship and a fleet of gondolas manned by 14 Venetian gondoliers. Tonight, see Louis sitting in customary splendour above the courtiers on his royal dais. A classically based triumph is accorded him, led by Mars. The god of war is atop a chariot, drawn forward by soldiers. Fawning nymphs are in attendance, testimony to Mars's military virility. Louis takes the salute with studied precision. He may never have led his troops into battle, his wartime experience confined to observing sieges, but that is of no matter. He has been the figurehead through decades of glory. After the triumphal procession, there follows an allegory, further pandering to the royal ego. It is a representation of how Europe, in French eyes, is currently arranged. In a position of unquestioned dominance stands the Seine, the main artery of Paris, and here the symbol of France. The river expects and receives cowering homage from 6 major waterways: the Thames, the Meuse, the Neckar, the Scheldt, the Rhine, and the Danube. For Louis, this was an evening that he had looked back on as a watershed in his reign. Before it stood years of victorious wars and mounting dynastic solidity. After it came repeated hammer blows of disappointment, both military and familial. Our eyewitness Saint-Simon marked the moment everything changed. Even while these rejoicings were being celebrated, news reached us which spread consternation in every family and cast a gloom over the whole city. The first reports of Blenheim were reaching Paris. Louis XIV bestrode the end of the 17th and the opening of the 18th centuries with a mixture of menace and panache. A dominating figure, the Sun King relied on military might to impose his pungent brand of autocracy through 7 decades of European history. France had 20 million inhabitants, 3 times the population of Spain, 4 times that of England, and 9 times that of the Netherlands. Louis harnessed this numerical advantage, building a huge, efficient army, and in a ferocious quest for personal glory and national security, unleashed it on France's neighbours. Louis's outlook was underpinned by 2 prejudices: a passionate belief in the divine right of kings, and a violent abhorrence of Protestantism. His life's aim was to create a force in the centre of Europe which he could lead with distinction. In September 1651, the 13-year-old boy king gamely announced to Parliament that he was assuming his place as active head of state. However, this was premature, for the real power still resided with Cardinal Mazarin, Louis's first minister. This Machiavellian cleric remained the de facto ruler of France until his death in 1661. Only